Hi, you're on 2ARMFM on the Friday morning wrap of the week, and that song you've just heard is a song called Domo, and it's by a Tibetan musician who lives in Australia called Tenzin Chogyal. I'm very appreciative of having Tenzin on the phone here at the moment. Good morning, Tenzin.
Good morning, Peter.
And thank you very much for taking my call. And you're about to visit Armidale on the 6th of August for a concert at the Armidale Playhouse, I believe.
Yes, I am on the road for next couple of months. And as part of my Be the Mountain tour, I'm coming to Armidale. I've visited Armidale a couple of times, so I really like coming down there.
That's good. And put on a nice cold night for you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, Tenzin, the song we just played, Domo, is, I believe there's quite a big story from that, and it's from your latest album called Yeshi Dolma.
Yeah.
And that's named after your mother, is that correct?
Yes. My mother was a nomadic, like my parents were nomads from Tibet, and I hold the lineage of Tibetan nomads. And this song is particularly to honor all the mothers, because we occasionally forget that we have been in the mother's womb for 9 months. And so it's a little homage song to my mother and all the mothers who, my mother and my parents, they fled Tibet in early 70s while Tibet was being invaded by China and during the Cultural Revolution. So I was just a toddler when I came out into exile into Nepal first. And then my father passed away in Nepal. And so I was sent to an orphanage in India, in Dharamsala, where I spent most of my childhood with 3,000 other kids. So this is a little honoring song to the compassionate nature of all the mothers. And I guess, you know, for every being, mother is the first teacher.
Yeah. I think there'll be a lot of people would certainly understand what you're saying there. Now, the start of very early stage of your life, having to leave your home country because of the invasion by China, and all the issues that caused, and how long did you be spending in refugee camps? I believe you also were in for a time in India as well, Nepal.
So my parents, like when they fled Tibet, my mom and dad, they had 9 kids, and out of that, 5 of us survived.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and my younger brother, we were sent to Dharamsala. For those listeners who probably would have traveled to Dharamsala would know, it's in the foothills of Himalayas, and where actually the Tibetan government in exile, headquarters of Tibetan government in exile is, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama has been living there for the last 70 years in exile. I happen to be one of those kids who are supported by, you know, the generosity of the gifts that were being sent from the West. And I'm pretty sure there were lots of people from like Australia as well who were donating funds for the education of these refugee kids living in exile, Tibetan refugee kids in exile. And I know a couple of Armidale friends who were one of those beings who were supporting the education for the kids there.
So you came to Australia in 1997. How was that organised? Was it part of a refugee placement program for refugee like yourself to come to Australia?
I wasn't one of the program, but there is a refugee program that was for the for those Tibetans. There is now maybe over 2,000 Tibetans who have come through the refugee program that is set up by Australian government, and most of them live in Sydney or Melbourne, and a couple of them live in, like maybe in Brisbane, we have about 100 Tibetans. And they're mostly all ex-political prisoners who have gone through a whole lot of atrocities in Tibet. You know, like in Tibet, even these days, even a one word could cost your being imprisoned. You know, like like if you express wanting a freedom of speech, or even if you keep a photograph of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, that could cost you being imprisoned by the Chinese regime. I was in refuge, like living as a refugee in India, and there is a program from Australia, which is Australian Volunteers Abroad. And my partner now, she came to India and lived in India for 2 years as part of the Australian Volunteers Abroad, and she was teaching English to the at the Tibetan Institute of Performing Arts in Dharamsala. So it's kind of like a refugee love story we met there.
So you came to Australia in 1997, to your own words, to start a new life. And you obviously brought a very rich background in music with you, because from what I understand, that from the time you got here, music's been very much part of your life and your career.
Yeah, so I'm a full-time music. I'm super fortunate in that world, because I'm a full-time music artist in Australia. I've been always wanted to be an artist as a growing kid, a refugee kid in India. But there was not much of an opportunity over there. So, you know, like my affinity with Tibetan music is from my mother singing, and my father's playing of flute. And then as I was growing up as a refugee kid, I've always aspiration to become an artist. So I find music a very powerful medium to tell the story of yourself as well as the community. You know, that affinity grew into becoming an artist. And as a kid, I used to hear my father play flute in the evenings. And after his long day's work, and my mother, whatever she's doing as a traditional lady, she would like sing her songs during the day, whatever chores she's doing.
Now, I noticed in the descriptions of you that the music is often described as nomadic music. Is that how you would actually classify it? And just what do you mean by nomadic music? Is it the fact that it comes from your heritage, from your family and from the people you associated with in Tibet before you had to leave?
Yeah, so I kind of attribute my sounds to the lineage of Tibetan nomads. But in the essence of my sound is in that lineage. But at the same time, I am actually collaborating with totally contemporary way. Like I've been collaborating with, you know, the string orchestra that I collaborate in Brisbane, the Western Classical String Orchestra, and then with Camerata, and then my own band. And also I have collaborated with Philip Glass and Laurie Anderson. So it's kind of like a whole lot of genres that I get to collaborate with. But at the same time, I keep the essence of my lineage, which is very core of my sound.
Yeah, it's really quite a unique mix of styles there, because you can see like in Domo and the song that we're going to play after we finish the interview here, Snowline, that the very simple basic music of with the flute and the lute that you play, then it mixes really, really well with the orchestration that's provided.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. You know, like when we say music has no language, it is very true in that way. You know, like I think music has such a powerful, medium to tell a story of yourself.
Mm.
At the same time, you can carry a whole story of the community, what we are going through. And I'm pretty sure during the pandemic that we have gone through and we are still going through, a lot of music are coming out, and it tells, you know, like a lot of new music are coming out where it's telling about their own story at the same time, how we are going, how we are coping, and how we are, you know, like, so in Tibet, a one word could cost you your life in a way, you know, like writing even a small short poem about your own feeling and you're expressing your freedom, wanting to have a freedom, can cost a poet in Tibet.
Your instruments really quite interest me. The bamboo flute is not, how's that different from a traditional flute? And you're also playing a three-string lute, which comes through very strongly on your songs as well.
Yeah. So the bamboo flute that I play is called Lingbu. Ling means universe. Pu, it's kind of like the sound of the blow, blowing the breath. So blowing the universe. And it's a bamboo, it's super simple bamboo flute with six holes for the finger and then one hole that is for the breath to go in. And I took that instrument because of my father's, the karmic imprint of hearing my father play in the evenings when I was a toddler. My father, I don't remember his face. But I remember his long hair and like quite tall. And in the evenings, he would play the flute after seeing, because he's kind of like a Tibetan medicine man. So during the daytime, there would be a lot of visitors coming to him for cure. And then in the evenings, he would be tired and probably playing his flute. And so. So I remember his flute sounds, but I don't remember his face because he passed away when I was very young.
Yeah.
And so occasionally when I play the flute, I try to visualize his face, but only some just luminous light comes in my mind. So in Tibetan world, in the older Tibetan world, there's a tradition of they don't keep any of their belongings when one passes away, when one takes towards the departure, and they give away everything that belongs to the person who just passed away. So my mother did that, and also she burned all the photos that was there of him.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I don't remember his face.
But those influences that you're talking about have obviously formed you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then the three-string lute, is that Dragyin, is it?
Yeah. So the three-string instrument is called Dragyin in Tibetan, and my one has a long neck with three-string, and it's got a little stomach where the sound amplification of the sound happens. Mm. And it's very in the family of guitar, lute, banjo, from the East, probably like rubab or shamisen from Japan, like in that kind of ukulele kind of tradition. And it's got a very beautiful tone to it, but it's a very simple instrument that lays the foundation for the voice to sing over it. And it's a very simple instrument, but it's got a very beautiful tone to it. And it's a very percussive instrument as well.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Now, you've had a lot of success, and particularly in recent times. One album called Songs from the Bardo came out in 2020, and was actually, you received a Grammy nomination, which is a huge acknowledgement of the quality and the uniqueness of the album.
Yeah.
It was a Grammy nomination for Best New Age Album in 2021.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that album? And I believe it does have its roots going back quite a few years.
Yeah, it's been a big journey with that album because it's kind of like, it's been in the making for last 15, 20 years. But then when I visited New York, I met up with my friend Laurie Anderson and Jesse Parrish-Smith. And we collaborated on that album. I didn't even know that it would be nominated for the Grammys, but it came out really well. I'm so happy that it did that, because it gave a lot of aspirations to young Tibetan artists. For me, I've never imagined that in the wildest world that I would be one of those Grammy-nominated artists. You know, like I come from a time when I didn't even know what electricity was. You know, like,
yes.
I remember the time when I first saw a train as a young little boy standing on a platform being sent over to India in that orphanage. And I saw this long thing coming towards me, and it looked like a long house, moving house. So I didn't even know, like in the wildest dream, that I would become like an artist.
Yeah, do you, obviously you do a lot of touring of Australia and becoming quite well known in that respect. Have you done a lot of touring overseas?
Yes, before the pandemic, I used to go every year to New York and then to Europe and Japan. And obviously I go back to India quite often, where my exile community is.
Mm.
His Holiness the Dalai Lama is a huge aspiration to me, like in my daily life.
And so yeah. coming to Armada on the Friday the 6th of August, what can we expect from you on that night?
Oh, some of my poetries and my own story, and I hope the music that I will bring will inspire people, and hopefully they will enjoy what I have to sing. Yeah, I think it's very beautiful that I get to go into the regional areas. When I was growing up in India, in that orphanage, Tibetan Children's Village School in India, things that I've learned about Australia was the dingo and kangaroo and kookaburra. So I get to now I get to see them, and it's like experience them in actual physical world. As a growing kid, I knew that it was a huge island. That was all I knew. I really love the Australian sky. It's so big. Living in India on the foothills of Himalaya, the half of the sky is actually blocked by the Himalayan mountains.
Mm.
So there's that vastness in Australia is so different from the living up in the mountains. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you very much for giving us a very illuminating description of your life and how your whole music's intertwined with the experiences you've had. And I think people would be advised to get along to see you at the Armidale Playhouse on the 6th of August. Details can be found on the www.adms.org.au Armidale Playhouse site. I wish you well for your regional trip, and particularly for the Armidale Playhouse performance here on the 6th of August. And thank you very much for talking to us here on 2ARMFM Armidale.
Thank you, Peter. Really looking forward to my little concert, Be the Mountain at Armidale. Yeah.
And we'd be very pleased to have you here.